You may not realize it right now, but if you use the internet, you are enjoying net neutrality. If the mainstream media were really doing their job, you would already be very familiar with this term. But we are in danger of losing net neutrality before we've even heard a definition. Several of the telecom giants are pushing for changes in the telecommunications bill of 2006 that will bring drastic changes to internet access. Mitchell Stepinchek of Chicago Media Action has been following the story. He says net neutrality allows people equal access to all websites.
You might have to pay a fee in order to get on the internet to access whatever page, web page or resource on the web that you would want. But once you're on, no one can exclude you on that count. And that's actually the grounds, that kind of an implied understanding of neutrality, even though it really necessarily hasn't been referred to as such, has basically been the groundwork of policy regarding telecommunications going all the way back to the invention of the telegraph, going back some 150 years. It's the idea that once you're on any kind of telecommunications infrastructure, whether it be the telegraph, the telephone, the internet, or whatever other communications media may follow, you're still nonetheless will have that kind of freedom of opportunity once you have all of the pieces in place. And that is under dire threat right now.
What are the companies proposing that are trying to shut down net neutrality?
The major companies at issue are the major cable and telecommunications companies in the United States, and there are maybe five companies or so that are really pushing the idea of abolishing net neutrality. Companies named like AT&T, Bell South, Verizon, Comcast, and maybe one or two others. But they're basically the main and, as far as I can tell, the only people who are advocating for an abolition of net neutrality. And the main reason why is because if they can abolish it, they can set up basically a privileged gatekeeper status for themselves, basically as the main purveyors of the kind of think of it as the digital pipeline for communications on the internet, and they would basically control the spigot, as it were. They potentially could allow content serve as a gatekeeper so that if you happen to be a subscriber to AT&T, you couldn't access stuff that wasn't on other networks unless you were able to pay a fee. And likewise, people couldn't access you unless you paid a fee. And this would be a tremendous boon for the cable and telecom companies because they stand to make a tremendous pretty penny about this. And the Supreme Court ruling last year, a famous Brand X case, basically said that, yeah, if you can pass a law, you can do this. And so that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to pass the law with the current planned rewrite of the main law concerning the media in the United States, the Telecommunications Act of 2006, which they're hoping to have as a planned rewrite to enshrine this in law to their advantage for the next year or two, but which would be of tremendous detriment to practically everyone else who uses the internet.
So are you saying that they are going to divide up the internet? Like, for instance, AT&T, it has control of all these sites, and SBC will have control of these sites. Is that how it's going to work, that they're dividing up the internet and then they will only allow you to see the sites that the others control by a fee? How does it work?
What you would basically spelled out is probably the vision that's been articulated, and in fact there's even a name for that, of tiered access. The idea of, in fact I like to use the metaphor of roads in describing this, that the only policy question would be, well, you'd basically set up multiple tiers. One, the equivalent, the internet equivalent of a four-lane superhighway that would be incredibly well-paved, well-kept, and you can drive at incredibly high speeds and be able to deliver not only web access but also things like digital television, digital radio, and other communications, and especially as a lot of the media will increasingly become digital in now and in coming years. That's going to be basically the backbone for a lot of the media that Americans are going to consume in their day-to-day life. It's basically provide that access, and the everyone else who can't pay that access, not only on that highway, but also across lanes, as it were, among different companies, would be relegated. You don't want to exclude them, but they would be relegated to basically the digital equivalent of an unkept dirt road that's one lane long. And that would, in one report I had actually seen, would actually be the equivalent, the digital equivalent of the New Jersey Turnpike. Just basically everyone would try to get to it and would face unending clogs, and would be very hard to try to get that kind of privileged access. And not only would they have that, the big telecoms would have that major highway all to themselves, they would also basically jockey among themselves for privileged access within that highway, who would get the most roads for the best price. And that's basically the extent of the debate as it's currently framed on Capitol Hill. But what is encouraging is that in the last 4 weeks or so, from like mid-January on through mid-February or so, this has really caught on among a number of advocacy groups to try to keep the internet neutral, to basically preserve the freedoms. One commentator had even referred to it as stopping electronic apartheid before it even starts. And it has caught on tremendously just within a matter of about 4 weeks. There have been a number of websites that have sprung up, commentators, op-eds in prominent newspapers. USA Today published something. There was even a debate of sorts in the San Francisco Chronicle, an op-ed. One journalist at the San Francisco Chronicle was talking about the issue with a fair degree of criticism of AT&T's plans for this. AT&T responded by basically pulling all of its advertising from the San Francisco Chronicle. And this caught a lot of people rather shocked, and it actually may actually respond negatively to AT&T with regards to, well, why do they do this? And then suddenly they'll have to find out about net neutrality and what AT&T and the other big telecom and cable companies have planned. And that, I think, might be the key as far as winning this as far as the public is concerned. It would be hard to try to raise the tens of millions of dollars that the telecom companies are going to try to use for trying to lobby for this. But what is encouraging is that they're trying to basically keep this as a kind of hush-hush issue, because if people find out what they've got planned, people wouldn't stand for it. And so the trick there is basically we're in a race now to keep the issue basically make it a public issue as widely as possible outside of the main media outlets. And that's, I'm happy to say, has happened a little bit so far, but it needs to happen a lot more in order for this to be able to stop the issue from, in order to make the issue much more of a concern and give public advocates a chance to win at this.
I'm interested in drawing a picture for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, when I go to my computer and I go to Google and I look up Chicago Indie Media and I type it in, it goes directly to Chicago Indie Media.
Mm-hmm.
What are these companies proposing to do? Are they getting in between when you're on Google and you call up Chicago Indie Media? Are they going to then divert you to a site that says you have to pay a dollar to see Chicago Indie Media? Or what are they proposing?
They would propose basically that any kind of access that you would have to, say, Chicago Indie Media, let's say, that you do a search, and if it turns out that Chicago Indie Media has its own independent web service, which does not belong to any of the major telecommunications providers. So that would mean that if anyone who happens to be on, use AT&T or Verizon or Comcast or what have you for access, would have to not only pay that, we have to pay each of these companies to access that network, since they're not outside of that, since they're playing this gatekeeper role and they're basically providing the digital equivalent of a toll road in order to gain that access. Also, Chicago Indie Media and probably all of the independent media center websites and a lot of political websites that might be considered liberal and left on the political spectrum would also have to pay those fees back to be able to access the people who want to be the audience. So that would be a tremendous boon as far as these telecom companies are, as far as profits are concerned, but a tremendous harm for not only people who want to access independent media, but also people who want to provide independent media, in that the costs for doing so would be markedly increased. And the freedom that we have taken for granted in the last decade or so with regards to use of the internet as a medium for outreach to people all over the country and all over the world is under serious risk within the United States and could lay the potential for serious risk worldwide, especially as a lot of these companies would hope to try to set up the same kind of for-profit model outside of the United States. That would basically... It wouldn't necessarily mean that AT&T would be censoring Chicago Indie Media or any other website, but since there is such a huge profit potential to be had, the effect would basically be that of censorship, and which is why I think a lot of people would be do well to try to find out about this issue and spread the word about trying to tell people what's happening and do what they can to stop it.
Then what would be the possibility of another entity setting up shop and allowing you to see these sites for free? Is that possible?
It's possible, but you would need to have the kind of money to be able to gain the kind of access, not only with regards to that kind of digital backbone. And that's not cheap. You would basically have to, I mean, yeah, the AT&T and Verizon are not going to stop you from basically stringing up copper wiring in the ground or a national wireless network. They're not going to stop you from doing that. But then the question is, can you do that? Do you have hundreds of millions of dollars just lying around to be able to pay for that kind of, to set up that infrastructure? By and large, not. And in fact, that actually kind of speaks to a little bit of the hypocrisy that these companies are having with regards to the kind of plans that they have, in that they are basically able to build the kind of network on the public back using a kind of monopoly franchise rights that they've won are providing the service. And then nonetheless, they want to try to increase that for their own gain, not acknowledging the fact that they're basically building it on with public resources. And so that kind of speaks to their hypocrisy. And another reason why I think people would do well to spread the issue to keep those networks neutral for not only current internet communications and future digital media, but for any kind of future technological and internet innovations that people haven't yet imagined.
What are the company's arguments for the bill? What are they using it as the reason why they desperately need these funds?
They're basically saying, I kind of like the phrase of Ed Whitaker, the CEO of AT&T. He's basically saying that we built these pipes and these cost a lot of money and we need to recoup our investment. Basically framing it as with regards to that these cost a lot of money and we need to recoup our investment. And that in a sense, he's kind of right. Yeah, they do cost money. You do need to recoup the investment. But point A, you're not exactly, people aren't already going on the internet for free. You have to pay to get access that way. So, and that money goes to your companies already. But what he's proposing is, in a sense, basically the digital equivalent of gouging. You're taking that kind of access that you're already charging people for and increasing it by orders of magnitude. And that is just, that not only will actually may prove to be detrimental to the overall media and communications framework of the United States, but also for a lot of the potential for future innovations, which actually might harm a lot of these major cable and telecom companies later on.
It's like asking you to pay your phone bill and then charging you for each call you make after you have already paid your phone bill.
And precisely. And it's not only that, but you're also asking, usually it's the person who makes the call who pays for it. Now you're asking for basically the people who are receiving the calls as well to pay for it as well. And depending on how they may get there, they may have to pay for additional fees for that access. Imagine that beyond just telephone calls to the internet, if you're accessing a website outside of these kind of privileged networks, yeah, you'd have to pay for that continued access, and there would be fees along the way. And people may be dissuaded from pursuing or trying to find that kind of independent media resource if the costs just keep escalating like that. And that, even though a lot of money would be made by these big telecom companies, it has the effect, as I said, of dissuading both independent media producers and independent media consumers, both. What people can do about the issue, and what's hopeful is that, like I said, a lot of campaigns have sprung up around this. There are a number of websites of a number of policy groups that are working on the issue. Probably the best one is the website for called netfreedomnow.org, which is set up by the group Free Press, the media advocacy group started by Bob McChesney, and here in Illinois, in fact. He's on the faculty at the University of Illinois, and he this group started a website called netfreedomnow.org, which people can use to check out. The group Common Cause, National Policy Lobbying Group on behalf of the public, has also started a campaign to keep your hands off the internet, basically, is the way they're framing it. And there are local groups that are also working on the issue in lots of different ways. A group I'm with, Chicago Media Action, has basically been serving as a kind of Chicago area liaison to discuss the issue. And again, if people are dissuaded over the fact that they're facing huge companies with hundreds of millions of dollars of lobbying budget, I don't think they should, because the reason they're doing that is because they're trying to keep trying to make it very hard for policymakers to say no to the public on this ground. But the trick is that the public, by and large, doesn't yet know about what's poised to happen. So there the trick is to tell people about it, spread the word, and which is what I would encourage listeners of this radio show and everywhere else who may hear about this message to continue to do. Spread the word. It's the most powerful weapon you have, and it's proven to be very victorious in recent years on questions of media policy, and hopefully on this question as well.
That was Mitchell Stefanchik of Chicago Media Action, and we will keep you informed about this issue. We're coming to you from the trenches.